Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Everybody, oh, it's not evening. It's afternoon. Oh my gosh! Welcome to the Sunday Brunch Show on Dynamic Dojo with Restita and Robert. And as you can tell, my internal clock is completely screwed up, completely. But for all our listeners out there, as you know, we normally air at 6 p.m. on Sundays, except for the third Sunday of every month because it's our Sunday Brunch Show. So here we are for morning, afternoon, evening, and I'm joined by my brother in the martial arts, Sifu Robert Deal. How you doing,
oh,
Bob?
Oh, my God. Wow.
Wasn't I talking about how I needed coffee before the show started?
You need something. Jeez, a
something.
Shot. I should mention shot because I'm a little hungover today. Yeah. So whisper, just a little. And rough week. I'm moving this week, and even my wife commented this morning. She said, "This does not feel like home." And she's, you know, we've lived in the same place for 20 years. I mean, my son's 19. We moved when my wife was pregnant with him. You know, and she says it just feels like we're staying in a hotel for a couple days. And my daughter, oh, my God, my daughter hates this place so much, she's already Googling how to break a lease.
Really?
Yeah. You know, we had a sad moment. We had to get rid of our dog yesterday. I'm really bummed about that because I love that dog, and you knew Hayden when she tried to bite your face off.
Yeah, I'm so bummed because, Hayden did, you know, try to bite my face off. But, you know, that's kind of, you know, I see that as, you know, that's par for the course, you know, for a dog that, you know, might not have been socialized as much as a pup, but, you know, did warm up to me finally. And what a sweetie. What a sweetie. Every time I woke up on the couch, he was right there going, "Hey, what's up? Hey, let's go outside. Come on, let's go. Nuzzle, nuzzle." And I absolutely love that dog. And, you know, I want to put a shout out there to any Burbank or Los Angeles friends out there because, hey, well, why don't you go ahead and tell everyone about Hayden?
She's about 8 now. She's part pit bull, and that's why she is aggressive. So if you have animals, thank you, but no thank you. She won't get along with other animals. She's a protector. She would die for your family if you took her. I mean, this dog would throw herself in front of a bullet for me.
Yeah.
And it was really, really hard. And you know, because I was out of work for 3.5 years, my credit went to the toilet. So I had to take this apartment. And you can tell these managers or owners or whoever they are did all the work themselves. It is the shoddiest paint job on this apartment I've ever seen in my life. All the door hardware is painted. The light fixture plates are painted. And that, I have a pet peeve. Have you ever walked into a place and see the light, see the outlets painted over?
Yeah, yeah.
That bugs the heck out of me. I mean, it just does. I don't know why, it just does.
Man.
The door hardware, because I've been into doors, frames, and hardware for 30-plus years. And so when I walk into a place and I see the locks are painted, it drives me up a wall.
I'll bet.
It really
does.
It really does. So I got to tell you this. I got a new couch this week from a friend of mine that helped us move.
Oh, cool.
$50, but it's really short. It's only about a foot and a half. So when you come into town, now you have a place to sleep.
Love you. Mean it.
I was waiting all week to do that joke. I'm telling you. No, actually, my daughter, and you know how tall Bree is? She's like 5'10".
Yeah.
She was actually laying on it last night, and she still had another foot. You know, or another 6 inches or so. So, you know, that couch is like over 6 feet, so you'll have plenty of room when you come down in May and August.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be fun. But, so, yeah, listeners out there, you know, consider this like a call from me and Sifu Bob. You know, Hayden is a great dog, beautiful dog. In fact, I'll post some pictures up on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. They're in the Burbank area. Sifu Bob had to give the dog up because they had to move to an apartment that doesn't allow dogs. And beautiful dog. And it kind of pissed me off what the worker said when your son had to go drop her off. And, you know, would you mind telling the listeners? Because I really want listeners out there to consider adopting Hayden. So that way she doesn't have to be in a, you know, in a shelter or, God forbid, you know.
We're right. God forbid, euthanized. But my son, because I love this dog so much, I couldn't bring myself to take her to the pound. Mm-hmm. Even though we had to. We had no choice in the matter. You can't. They at this place, and we're paying good rent. We gave him a lot of money for a security deposit. We can't store anything. We can't have pets. There's no tobacco. There's nothing. So my son takes the dog up to the pound, and this officer, and I'm going to insist on a formal apology, or I will make it my mission to get her relieved of duty.
Yes.
Because she's a civil servant. It's like, so be civil. Mm-hmm. She said to Brandon, she said, well, you know, it made him feel guilty. You know, this dog's 8 years old. Do you know what's going to happen, what's probably going to happen to her? And just kept going on and on and on about it's going to be euthanized and all this other crap. And I'm going, what gives you the right? Now Brandon didn't tell me. He told my wife this.
Mm-hmm.
When I asked him how did it go, he said, oh, fine. Nothing was wrong. But then he told my wife a different story. And it's like, what gives these people the right to make a 19-year-old kid feel like that?
Yeah. Now, this was the officer at the pound,
at the shelter, yes.
You know, and you know, I know why Brandon didn't tell you, because you so love that dog. I mean, you probably would have gotten in your truck and went down there and knocked out a couple people, you know, which is probably why he didn't tell you and probably told Jenny instead.
Told Jenny instead, right.
Yeah, but, you know, so listeners, if there's anyone out there in the Burbank area, Burbank, L.A., I don't know what other cities are somewhat nearby, you know, if you find it in your heart to take in another dog, because Hayden doesn't do well with animals. If you find it in your heart to, you know, adopt a dog and you don't have one, Hayden is very sweet. She's just a big, lovable bear. I was talking to Sifu Bob before the show, and I offered your service, and I Bob, without even asking, I said, you know, Bob, I'm sure would even take the time to acclimate you to Hayden, or the other way around. I guess it would be acclimate Hayden to a new family or whatever. And, you know, I would hate to see Hayden put down, you know, too sweet of a dog. So, you know, anyone out there, Burbank, LA, surrounding areas, you know, if you find it in your heart to adopt a dog or know anyone that might love, you know, I forgot her mix. What's her mix again? Pitbull and lab?
Pitbull and they say retriever.
Oh, okay. And she's absolutely beautiful. She looks more like a retriever. Just beautiful. But with a pitbull head.
Exactly. Retriever with this big old head. Now, the only thing is, if you take a dog like Hayden, you be prepared to pet. Because that dog... And that's how she got acclimated to you. You're sleeping on my couch. Mm-hmm. And no, you weren't sleeping. You were sitting up. It was still morning. And she came over and started nuzzling you to pet her.
Yeah. Yeah. Started nuzzling, put her head on my lap. And, you know, every night after that, you know, I'd wake up with her face right there, right on my face. And I'd be like, oh, hey, baby girl, how are you? Let's go outside. Let's go. And, you know, and just a beautiful dog. I can't say enough how beautiful. Beautiful blondie, you know, retriever mix, you know. So if you find it in your heart or know someone that would want a beautiful dog, 8 years old, get a hold of one of us on our Facebook page. Just look up Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio, or email directly Sifu Bob at Dynamic Dojo. Oh, shoot, I forgot your email address.
Dynamic Dojo Radio co-host at Gmail.
I can't even remember mine. I don't ever write myself. So Dynamic Dojo co-host at gmail.com.
Dynamic Dojo
Radio co-host. See, I knew I made that too long. Dynamic Dojo Radio co-host at gmail.com. And let's set something up. I don't want to see Hayden put down. And that pound officer that pretty much told Hayden that, well, you know what's going to happen to this dog, this old, she's going to be euthanized. You know, shut up. You know, who wants to hear that? So, anyway, I hope the listeners will find it in their heart, because I'd hate to see Hayden put down. All right. Well, onto a little less depressing. Why don't we get into our shout-outs? Who do we got for birthdays on your end, Sifu Bob?
On my end, it's Matt Master, George Kirby. I believe he's turning 70 today. Not today, but on the 17th, tomorrow. And then we've got John Painter. I forget what art he does. He's like a Dimmock.
He does like Bagua.
No, that's right. He has an internal art. You're right. His birthday's on the 22nd. And you've got some, too.
I do. Speaking of internal arts, I'd like to place a shout-out out there to Nancy Lucero. She's a young style Tai Chi instructor here in the Seattle area. Her birthday is on the 18th, and that's Tuesday. I also want to send another shout out to an old friend of mine, Stephanie Zimmerman, who was a guest last year or a couple years ago, along with Cecil Longino here on our show, a historical fencer here in Seattle, Washington, and her birthday's on the 19th. Happy birthday to Nancy and Steph. And last but not least, I want to send a shout out to Mr. Scott Irie. He's a Iaido practitioner in the Muso Jikiden Asian Ryu style. Who taught me very briefly, and his birthday's on the 20th. So for everyone out there that's having a birthday this week, here's a tune for you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Everybody. Now, listeners out there, if you're on the chat board, I need some feedback, because I'm getting some weird sounds on my end. It sounds like the sound on my end sounds kind of like it's underwater. It's kind of weird. So, but if anyone out there is hearing the show and it's sounding kind of weird, just type in the chat board or something. Let me know. But our phone number here.
On my end.
Oh, okay, good. It's weird. Like, I think Blog Talk Radio servers are acting up, because there's more than one complaint about the sound quality. But you know, they're working on it. But for our listeners out there, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. And in about another 20 minutes to a half an hour here on the Dynamic Dojo, we're going to be welcoming Master John Krang, who is a stunt person, actor, tungsudo black belt, I think tungsudo, and a bouncer, film producer. So if you have any questions about being a bouncer, stunts, getting into film acting, getting into film producing, go ahead and give us a call a little bit later. Yes, he does tungsudo, but we'll get into that a little bit later. All right, let's get into some shout-outs before we move on to health news and Bob's signature weird laws. I've only got one. I've only got two shout-outs. There is a seminar in Atlanta that's hosted by Sifu Ramilio Olivieri, and this is going to be held at Gong Fu Atlanta Chinese Boxing Institute, and that's located at 130 West Bridge Industrial Boulevard in McDonough, Georgia, 30228. And for this seminar, Sifu Olivieri is going to be teaching kicking drills, proper stretching and accuracy, speed, footwork, and sparring applications. And again, this is in Atlanta, so if you would like any information about this seminar, it's where's the email address? The email address is gongfu atlanta, gongfuatlanta at gmail.com. And I just want to check on something because I did not put it on, I didn't put the date on those notes, but I distinctly remember it was going to be this coming weekend. But if you go to Facebook and search for Gong Fu Atlanta or Kicking Seminar Gong Fu Atlanta, I'm sure you will find it. And I'm sorry that I didn't put the date on there. I was just cutting and pasting. So anyway, so that's going to be this weekend, I believe. Sifu Bob was going to remind me of this, but I actually remembered.
well, yeah. See what happens when you actually put it in the notes?
Yeah, I know. It's awesome. Yesterday I posted something on Facebook about why I chose martial arts as my career as opposed to pursuing my degree in psychology. I posted it up and Sifu Bob said, you know, you really should share this on the show tomorrow. So I said, remind me, and he did, and it's on the notes. So here's the story, okay? I chose martial arts over a career in psychology. Now, when I was in high school, I wanted to become a clinical psychologist, and I went to community college at first with the intention of doing college transfer to the University of Washington and getting my master's and eventually a doctorate, and that's what I wanted to do. And I chose martial arts in my second year of college. I briefly went into a stint in wanting to be a Seattle police officer. I took the test. I passed all the tests, and they asked me in for my psych eval and getting all my higher paperwork and stuff like that. And I, in a sense, chickened out because I had just opened up my karate school, and I went, you know, what do I want to do? What do I really want to do? And it was kind of a toss-up between, you know, being a civil servant and helping the public or, in a sense, helping the public just within the martial art realm. And I chose martial arts. And in yesterday's post, I wrote, this is why I do what I do. And what happened yesterday was a new child joined my Tiny Tigers class. Now, my Tiny Tigers class is normally reserved for 3- and 4-year-olds. However, this little boy, he was about five and a half. However, he has vestibular problems. He actually has physical issues with balance and proprioception, even how he perceives the world around him and how it affects his balance. It's, you know, it's actually a neurological dysfunction in a sense. And when his mother approached me with this, I said, well, he's 5 and a half. He should be in our Mighty Mites class because that's for like 5- to 7-year-olds. And she told me about his issues, and I said, oh, okay, well, that class is relatively smaller. It'll have less distractions. Let's go ahead and try him in the Tiny Tigers class, and we'll see how he does. And if he does okay, we'll put him in the older class. Well, yesterday, he came in, and he was so excited. The first thing said was, I practice kung fu in my dreams. And I went, whoa. he's been wanting to do this for like a long, long time. I said, well, have you ever watched Kung Fu Panda? And his eyes lit up, and he's like, yeah, you know, Po and Master Shifu and this and that and the other. And I said, well, I'm kind of like Master Shifu. And his eyes lit up, and I said, well, let me show you what we do in the Gwyn. So I taught him how to bow in, and we ran around the studio for a little bit. I showed him everything and had him, like, touch everything. You know, this is a heavy bag. This is a banana bag. This is Bolo, our grappling dummy. This is Chip, our other grappling dummy. And and it allowed me to actually think about ways that I could challenge his balance and strengthen it, but not necessarily overstimulate his neurological functions, you know, because I knew that with his balance, he had poor core muscle tone. So it's like, okay, what am I going to do to get him to engage these muscles? So for a half an hour before class, I sat in the middle of the studio and I went, what am I going to do for this child? What am I going to do for all the children? Because, you know, there's like three kids in that particular class. What am I going to do that's going to help Elliot and still help the other kids? And I came up with a class yesterday that the kids absolutely loved. And Elliot, you wouldn't have known that he had neurological problems. I mean, the only things that I saw was, you know, if he was sitting that he would kind of flop a little and it was kind of hard for him to like hold himself up. But other than that, if he was running and, you know, using his fine motor control, it was actually very, very on even keel with the other kids. You wouldn't have been able to tell. And, you know, gave him a high five and really reassured him. And all the kids had fun. And the other kids just brought him in and said, hey, you're a new friend. And unbeknownst to me, I guess his mom was sitting on the sidelines and just crying and sobbing and, you know, just happy because she said later on, what I saw today was what physical therapists have been working with him on for years. And he was having no trouble. And I'm like, wow. So I started to cry. I started to get a little teary-eyed. And you know, at that point, I said to myself, this is why I do what I do. And I know there are many martial artists out there that probably have been told by family and friends, hey, go get a real job. You know what I mean? Go get a real job that gives you a real paycheck. But you choose, you know, your martial arts or your fitness training as your career, regardless of what other people say. So I know that those people out there that are, you know, that have the same career choice, I know they know what I'm talking about. This is why I do what I do, to see kids thrive like that and to see the look of joy in their faces when they get something new. You know, I mean, when he grabbed onto that banana bag and he's like, oh, my gosh, it's so heavy. I can move it. And he moved it. I was like, dude, you rock, Elliot. So anyway, big shout out to Elliot, who is just going to be an outstanding student. I know that. And a shout out to his mother, Elisa, for giving us a try and putting faith in martial arts and actually believing in me for allowing me to have him try out class. So, you know, they signed up yesterday. He's an official Kung Fu brother now, and kudos to him. So shout out to Elliot. You rock. You rock, buddy. Keep up the good work.
Very cool.
Oh, okay. I'll stop now before I cry again. He's just such a cool dude. All right. So do you have any other shout outs there, Sifu Bob?
Well, every week until May 18th, you know we're going to have a shout out.
Dragon Fat.
Martial Arts Convention of the Century is coming to Burbank, the Holiday Inn Media Center, downtown Burbank, which, you know, is so far from me. I'm outside of Michael Matsuda, I'm probably the closest one to it, and he lives nearby. We're going to have six sections. There's going to be the history section, which includes Lorenzo Lamas, Cynthia Rothrock, James Hong, Art Camacho, Takaboto, Kerry Ogawa Wong, Richard Norton, Peter Kwong, Bill Riyasaki, Eric Lee, Rodney Kakiyama, and Gerald Akamura. In the author section, it's going to be Doug Wong, Alan Woodman, Benny the Jeter Kitas, Peter Cunningham, which, by the way, is next week's special guest on our show,
mm-hmm.
Simon Reed, Lambert Chung, Sol Calawese. This is why I don't do names. John Barrett, our guest today, John Crane, will also be there as an author. Steve Sexton and Myriad Publications. In the film section, we're going to have Fumio Demura, which if nobody knows what he's famous for other than being a fantastic hardcore martial artist, he
mm-hmm.
was Pat Morita's stunt double in the Karate Kid movies.
Mm-hmm. An amazing karate guy. Mm-hmm.
Oh, amazing. Weapons.
Amazing.
Oh. Do you remember he was at the Masters Hall of Fame in 2012?
Yes, I was starstruck because, you know, when I was coming up in karate, he was a household name, at least,
he
you know,
amazing.
My household. He
Absolutely.
Was the man. He was the karate man. And I looked up to him for years and years and years, and I still do. Amazing, amazing man.
Oh, yeah. There's also going to be Shin Koyamada, Donnie Williams, Gorilla Pictures, Johnny Ray Gasca from The Gathering, The Stunt People, CNC Movie Factory, Showbiz, LLC. The arts and crafts section is going to include Paul Wee from The Simpsons, Mel's Props, Ed Parker Jr. and his artistry, My Scent Image, Justin Wagle, Martial Arts Strategy Games, Halas Jewelry, 2K Customs, Tradition Shirts, Jerome Luz, Hyperactive Monkey Book. In the special effects session.
I always have to laugh
have...
at that, sorry. Because it sounds so cool. Hyper Monkey!
No kidding. In the special effects section, which seems to be the biggest section that he's going to have, is going to be Neil Wynn, Eric De La Vega, Christopher Hernandez, Neil Kinnamore, Norman Myers, Calvin Lowe, Amber Skoronsky, Alfred Paredes, Koji Omura, George Gasper, Jason Krager, Rick Czar, Scotty Fields, Bruce D. Mitchell, Hiroshi. Yeah, right. It looks like...
I don't have it in front of me, but...
well, it's Hiroshi Kate Gurry. K-A-T-E-G-I-R-I.
Katagiri or something, yeah. Katagiri.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Martial arts vendors will be Sidekick Publications, Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio, Valley Martial Arts Supplies, Kill Combat Instruments, Pacific Association of Women in the Martial Arts, PAMA. They actually moved up the rankings. They're now listed as number 5.
What?
Yeah, they were like number 9.
9 or 8 or something, yeah.
Eight, something like that. And then they moved up. Number 6 is Worldwide Martial Arts Council. United
cool.
Martial Arts for Christ. Filipino Arts with Felix Roles. And the Masters Hall of Fame, which has also changed a little bit. It was listed as Dan Heck's Masters Hall of Fame. I think Dan probably had a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to be Dragon Fest. It's going to be May 18th this year in the city of Burbank. And if it works out, we're going to have Michael's going to have 2 a year every 6 months.
Very cool.
And if the crowd's what he expects it to be, it's going to be a 2-day event.
Very
cool. Same vendors,
cool.
Same everything, but it's going to be Saturday and Sunday. Because not everybody's going to be able to fit.
Mm-hmm.
He's already at about 300 tickets online, and there's still 2 months to go. Actually, 9
yeah.
weeks from today.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. So get your tickets now, folks. Like Sifu Bob said, if you buy your online tickets, you get priority entry. Now, do the tickets cost more at the door? I'd forgotten.
No, they are the same, but you have to wait. If you buy them at the door, they're still $25 a piece, but you have to wait
okay.
until the online ticket holders go in.
Get in. Okay, got it. So,
by the way, and this was a chore in itself. I found the picture of you and Hayden.
Oh, okay.
I scrolled through your photo albums. Your what do you have, like 5,000 different photo albums? You have a bunch.
I know I've got like at least 1,000 pictures up on there somewhere.
Yeah, you do. But I found it and I posted it on your wall, and now it's actually on my wall. It's a picture of you and next to Hayden hugging her. As
aww,
you're leaving,
good.
That picture was 2012.
Yes, yes. She's just a sweetie, and we'll go ahead and put that on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page also. So I hope the listeners out there can find it in their heart to give Hayden a great home. She's only 8 years old, you know, but I just found it very, you know, what's the word? Just rude that that the pound worker would just make a big deal about, well, you know. We're probably just going to euthanize this dog anyway because it's just so old. You know, screw that lady, you know. Sorry, pardon my French, folks, but I'm a dog lover. And it's like, you know, you don't say that. You don't say that to anyone that loves dogs. All right, so anyway, back to the thing. So May 18th for Dragon Fest, and I just want to put another quick shout-out out there about the Pacific Association of Women Martial Artists annual training camp. We'll be holding that training camp September 19th through the 22nd in Turner, Oregon, and it's going to be held at Aldersgate Retreat, which is a great retreat, great little cabins, great food, wonderful training rooms and training outside training areas. So if you're a woman martial artist or even if you're a co-ed school, you don't have to be from a women's only school, because that's a big stereotype that a lot of people have. Oh, you have to be a feminist group, or oh, you have to be from women only school, or what have you, you know. No, it's open to all women and teenage girls. And if you have any women in your dojo or dojang or guan, or even in your MMA gym, judo, jiu-jitsu, what have you, you are welcome to attend this camp or to become a part of the Pacific Association of Women Martial Artists. You're not required to come from the Pacific Northwest. We've had people come from all over the country and even outside of the country to attend our camps and to teach. So for more information about our annual training camp, September 19th through the 22nd, just go to www.pawma.org, pawma.org, and all the information is there. We are looking for women to apply to be teachers and trainers for this year's camp. And I am in charge of the teacher selection. So what you want to do is, if you're interested in applying, just go to pawma.org and you'll see information on how to apply and where to send your application. We're already getting applications in right now, and normally we expect a big influx of them coming in by the end of March. Applications for teachers will be at the end of this month, so we've only got a couple weeks, folks, so we would love to see new faces training at PAMA. So if you're a lady...
I wanted to know, Rusty, what is the limitations on young girls? Is there a certain age where they need to be accompanied by their parent?
We're looking at allowing girls, you know, anywhere between like maybe 14 through 17, right? Any younger than that, probably not. I mean, I've seen younger kids there, but you know, we're looking at primarily teens. Now, if you are under 18, we are trying to get together a youth coordinator, a good youth coordination team for the camp, so that way there's a mentor there with the youth, so that way, you know, they don't feel like, oh, these adults, you know what I mean? So that way they've got, like, their own group that they can, you know, still hang out with their own age, yet still train with the rest of the women. And to always have a reference person there or a mentor there working with them in classes that may not be suitable for younger people. So Because we really want to open up the doors to the younger generation. I mean, after all, they're our future, right? So we're really making a lot of, we have a lot of great ideas for how we can make this year's camp a little bit different and more welcoming and more accessible to more people.
Right.
So,
and there was something said, and I've got to bring this up. There was something said about making it, making men available for this. I don't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great thing. I don't think that men should be allowed.
Yeah.
I think it's really good.
Yeah, the only time that we allow anybody else is during our public demonstration. Now, here's the thing, though. You know, there had been some flack that we got a few years back when we were actually holding the camp in a community center. And, you know, at the time, the organizers of our camp were turning away people that were even, you know, looking through the windows down into the gymnasium where we were training. They didn't want any men or anybody, boys, men, what have you, watching. But the thing is, it's a public venue. It's not like, you know, a reserved camp like what we're having, you know, this year and stuff like that. It's a public venue. It was a community center. You know, and people were going in and out, stuff like that. I mean, you know, how do you stop the public from going into a public venue and going, oh, hey, what's that, you know, and watching? But, you know, I guess many people were being turned away, you know, oh, you're a guy, get out, you know, that kind of thing. But they weren't even in the gymnasium. So we got some flack for that, and I understand why. It's a public venue. So we had to completely rethink how, you know, being a new board of directors this year, we had to completely rethink how are we going to do this, right? So when it comes to demonstration, the demonstration evening, anyone is allowed to come in. Bring your dog if you want. We don't care. You know, I mean, anyone is welcome to come in. Just for a small fee, like $5 or something like that, donation toward the organization. And that, you know, that includes, you know, the social hour afterwards and stuff like that. But when it comes to actual training, we prefer that the trainers be female. Just because it's just, you know, a rare thing where, you know, women can go and just train with women in an event that was organized by women and taught by women. And it's only once a year. Right. And so far, you know, many co-ed schools are very understanding about it and send their women to our camps and stuff like that. However, I do want to make it clear that we're not like a feminist organization. It's specifically, a way to expose the martial arts to women and to allow women to see, you know, the benefits and empowerment through martial art training that would otherwise not get involved in a predominantly male activity, you know. So it just gives new you know, newbies to the martial arts that are women a different venue to get introduced to it. But, you know, in a way, I agree, you know, that if you're going to be in a class that you expect to be taught by women and there's a bunch of guys there, then, you know, what the heck, you know?
Right.
So, but, you know, we're still talking about that. So, but, you know, because we definitely do not discriminate against the guys, definitely, because, you know, I train with guys, almost all the ladies in the organization have trained with guys and have rolled with the guys and have taken their lumps from the guys. We have no problem with guys. It's just that for this event, we ask that, you know, the classes remain private only to women, but, you know, social hour, you know, whatever, demonstrations, knock yourself out. Come on in. Let's all get together and be family. So,
that's right. And guys, do not try to approach it, because I understand that there's a sniper on a building somewhere and you'll never know where it's coming from.
That's all. That's the only thing you hear. And I figured out ways how to make biodegradable darts. But anyway, okay.
Oh, yeah, that's something to share with us, yeah.
Biodegradable darts. Okay, we're running a little bit behind, so but tune in. Keep tuned in, you guys, because we're going to have Master John Krang joining us for our last hour All right, and our phone number here is 347-677-0699. All right, so with that said, let's move on to our health news. All right, I just want to quickly go through some natural cholesterol-lowering strategies. All right, and I'm going to go ahead and post this story here on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page during the break. Okay, and this article was written by James O'Keefe, MD. And Dr. O'Keefe says many patients prefer to treat their high cholesterol without resorting to prescription drugs. Sometimes, by utilizing lifestyle and diet changes, we can avoid statin drugs altogether. More often, these non-prescription natural therapies can allow individuals to take lower doses of the statin drugs and still maintain healthy cholesterol levels, which is ideal for people who are at higher risk for future heart attacks and other cardiovascular problems. And I really wanted to pick this story because the women in my family have a history of taking the statin drugs. Like my mother takes simvastatin, and she's in the last few years looking for more natural ways to lower her cholesterol. And as am I, because if this runs in my family, I don't want to be on the statin drugs either. But now, the thing is, though, is that there is a benefit to these statin drugs. They are safe, and they are effective drugs that save millions of people every year. And as most cardiologists know, including Dr. O'Keefe, a lot of them are on a statin drug, such as Crestor, Lipitor, Simvastatin, which is what my mom takes. And doctors prescribe these drugs day in and day out, and they see firsthand how safe and effective they are for keeping your blood vessels, heart, and brain healthy. So, with that said, let's consider these options to help keep your cholesterol levels on an even keel and in ideal ranges in a more natural way. So, number one, red yeast rice. Say that 10 times fast.
And no over kidding.
Red yeast rice. Yeah, it came out as rice. It just came out as rice. But an over-the-counter option to help support cholesterol health is red yeast rice. It's a natural product of a fungus called Monascus purpureus grown on rice. Studies show that the active compounds in red yeast rice are called monacolins. I can't say it. I don't know how to say it. However, it is frequently produced in Chinese facilities that would not meet FDA standards and can contain a dangerous chemical toxin called citrinin, as well as unregulated quantities of pharmaceutical strength statin. The solution to use is American-grown and produced CardioTabs red yeast rice, or each batch is tested to be free of any toxins and to contain the standardized, safe, and effective range of the monocolins. So interesting. All right, number two, fish oil. We take fish oil here at home too. Omega-3 fats found in fish oil help lower triglycerides, increase HDL, which is a good cholesterol, and maintain cardiovascular health. To get these benefits, you will need to take a moderate to high dose of fish oil. CardioTab's omega-3 products are highly purified and concentrated oils that provide DHA, the most protective of the omega-3 fats. But you want to make sure you speak with your physician to find out how many capsules would be necessary for you to see substantial improvements in your triglyceride levels. All right. Number three, tea supplements. Theophylactins, catechins, also known as EGCG, and Okay, theraflavins, catechins, and polyphenols are antioxidant compounds that occur naturally in tea and have been shown to support cholesterol health. You know, I'm beginning to wonder if this particular article is kind of plugging certain brands.
You think?
Possibly. I'll go ahead and plug it. There is a supplement called Cardio Tea. And it's a convenient and effective way to get the benefits of tea. Now, studies have shown that tea antioxidants like EGCG may help support weight loss, especially when used as part of a healthy diet and exercise program. However, there is a certain amount of caffeine in Cardio Tea, And then it's about the same as a quarter cup of tea. All right, number four, plant sterols, also known as phytosterols. This is a natural product that comes from plants such as nuts, beans, and vegetable oils. Plant sterols are help maintain healthy cholesterol levels by reducing the amount of cholesterol you absorb from food. Plant sterols have been used for almost two decades now and are on the most extensively tested over-the-counter therapy for lowering cholesterol. So, and there's another plug for another another product. But now, any foods containing at least 0.65 grams per vegetable oil, sterol esters, eaten twice a day with meals for a daily total intake of at least 1.3 grams, and as part of a diet low in saturated fat and cholesterol, may reduce the risk of heart disease, can lower your bad cholesterol anywhere between 10 to 12%. So, you know, check out plant sterols. And number five, I'm only going to do one more, and I'm going to post the rest of the article on our Facebook page, is vitamin D. Now, did you know that vitamin D is considered more of a hormone than a vitamin, quote unquote? I didn't know that.
Hey, Rusty, do you know how to make a hormone?
I'll bite. No, I don't. How do you make a hormone?
Don't pair.
I was waiting for it. I'm like, oh. Did you notice the funky silence that I had there? I'm like, should I answer this?
You're going, oh my God, what's he gonna say now?
Yeah, I was like sitting there going, don't know what to say. Okay, so vitamin D. Again, it's more of a hormone than a vitamin because it's made in one organ of the body and profoundly affects cells throughout the body. Now, the first symptom of vitamin D deficiency is aches and pains in the muscles, joints, and bones. However, do see your doctor about that. You know, you don't want to just blame it on lack of vitamin D, but for most people it is a lack of vitamin D. Decreased vitamin D levels can cause an increase in the parathyroid hormone, which can lead to increased inflammatory levels. And chronic inflammation can predispose diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and stroke. And this is why maintaining vitamin D levels is very essential. Be sure, though, everyone, to ask your doctor to check your vitamin D level and ask them about your if it's safe for you to take vitamin D, because if you're taking any other medications, you definitely want to talk to your doctor about that. It's said that most Americans have abnormally low levels of vitamin D and that it's crucially important to your long-term health and well-being. So, you know, make sure you talk to your doctor first, you guys, before going on a vitamin D regimen. So that's it for my health news. Again, we're running a little bit late, but everyone, please make sure that you tune in. We're going to have Master John Krang with us for our last hour. But let's go ahead and get into, where's my weird news stinger? I lost it. Oh, my gosh. Hold on. But let me find it. There it is. Let's get into our weird news.
Weird news.
Now, of course, since you recorded it yourself, without, it's just the music that makes it different. You could have done it. You could have just said,
I know,
weird,
right?
News.
I know, weird.
But anyway,
news.
This is going to be quick because we are running so far behind. This is about one sick bastard. Police find 11 hidden cameras in a woman's Kansas City apartment. A woman told Kansas City police she thinks her landlord, who is also her boss, may be behind the 11 hidden cameras that cops found in her home. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, I'm just coming off because, you know, I'm moving, like I said earlier, and my wife's boss was our landlord. Landlord, but a landlord still. The 25-year-old woman said she thinks the 47-year-old man, who has not been charged or named, has been spying on her since October 2013 when he remodeled her bathroom, according to WDAF. The woman called police on Saturday after she found a camera hidden in one of the smoke detectors, the Kansas City Star reports. Police found 10 other cameras, including four in her bedroom, Wow. No.
Yeah.
Less. And the victim told the star she has moved out of the apartment. Wow. A slimeball.
Yeah. That's,
That could have been up on the internet. He could have, wow.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know if that's considered weird news. I mean, it's weird that many cameras were in her apartment. But that's that's creepy.
Well, you know what's weird about it is he hasn't been arrested. Because who else would have done it? What, the guy who installed the smoke detectors did it? I don't think
so. Yeah, it's creepy. And this guy needs
It's very creepy, very disturbing that somebody
it
would
is.
Do that.
It's
weird laws. These come from Idaho. It is illegal for a man to give his sweetheart a box of candy weighing less than 50 pounds. My wife wants to move to Idaho now. You may not fish on a camel's back.
Oh, okay.
Riding a merry-go-round on a Sunday is considered a crime.
You know, okay, that's
well,
ridiculous.
That sucks.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, cities in Idaho, in Boise, residents may not fish from a giraffe's back. Well, if you're on a giraffe's back, for one thing, you're going to slide off, and you're going to have one hell of a long fishing pole. Because you're going to be like 14 feet in the air.
Oh, gosh. This and the scary thing is there once had to have been an issue.
Yes. And I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It looks like Coeur d'Alene.
Oh, Coeur d'Alene.
Is that how you pronounce Coeur d'Alene?
Yeah, Coeur d'Alene, yeah.
It didn't look that simple. I thought about it and going, I don't think so. But
yeah.
If a police officer approaches a vehicle and suspects that the occupants are engaging in sexual activities, he must either honk or flash his lights and wait for 3 minutes before approaching the car.
I love how common courtesy became part of the law. That's
right,
awesome.
Right. In Eagle, Idaho, dirt may not be swept from one's home and onto the street. That's called littering. That's like a law everywhere. Bicycles are not allowed in the tennis courts.
Okay, I can see that.
I can see that, absolutely. Persons may not camp out on sidewalks in the city.
Okay.
That would make, people do that all the time for concert tickets, movie premieres.
Yeah.
That sort of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, but would it be considered vagrancy if they did that? Interesting.
It's very interesting. In Pocatello, a law was passed in 1912 providing that the carrying of concealed weapons is forbidden unless some are exhibited to public view.
Hmm.
A person may not be seen in public without a smile on their face. Wow, really? Somebody better not be having a bad day in Idaho.
I know. You're going to end up being arrested and thrown in the pokey.
Absolutely. And that is it for my weird news and my weird laws. And I'm sorry, everybody. We are running way behind. We just had a lot to talk about.
We had a lot to talk about, but I sure love those.
Weird news.
All right, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a quick 3-minute break. And during that time, we're going to get a hold of Master John Krang, our special guest. So our phone number here is 347-677-0699. If you are a friend or colleague of Master Krang's and would like to call in and say hello and do a shout-out or what have you, or join the conversation, please feel free to call in, 347-677-0699. And we'll be right back in about 3 minutes and 3 seconds. We'll be right back after this.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trapped.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The only thing I didn't learn today...
The only thing I didn't learn is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better, and kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And now, on with the show.
All right, and welcome back, everyone. If you're just now tuning in, this is the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show with Restita and Robert. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699, and I'd like to give the mic over to Sifu Robert Beal, who is going to introduce our special guest for the day. So, to you, Sifu Bob.
Well, I would like to introduce our guest for today, Master John Krang, Tang Soo Do martial artist, stuntman, bouncer, bodyguard. Please help me welcome Master John Krang to the show. Welcome, John.
Hey, Sifu Bob, what's up?
Oh, not a whole lot, man. How are you?
I'm doing good, doing good. Yeah, we just I just wrapped on a project with David Carradine's son. Melissa Tracy was the second unit director on it, and Rob Moses, who's been training, David Sifu's since Lone Wolf of Quaid was a stunt coordinator, and Jerry Pele was the director and writer on it. So yeah.
Awesome.
Wow, very cool.
It was fun. Yes, thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. And we already have a caller online that might want to speak with you, but we promise we'll get to your call, area code 310. We normally like to start our show by having our guests tell our listeners a little bit about their martial arts background. And I see, Master Krang, that you've got like an extensive background in the martial arts. So if possible, can you tell our listeners about your background in martial arts, please?
Oh, gosh. I started when I was 12. It's, it's been a long time. I started Taekwondo, did Aikido. I did Aikido for 3 years. I did Chan Shan Pai. Then I settled into a Tang Soo Do school. I was one of those kids that grew up, we couldn't, came from a single parent, and I couldn't afford classes. So, I just kind of bounced around from school to school until, we took introductory lessons, and then the instructors would say, hey, look, you're much more advanced in this. Why don't you just stick it out in the beginner class and kind of hang out and, until the owner says something. And, that's kind of the deal it was for a while. And then, back in, you know, it was in Maryland that I met Mike Kinney, actually. I was going for a friend of mine who wanted to check out the class, so I did. And, you know, we went, and then what happened was, you know, he said, hey, look, you know, I've seen you around. Why don't you just help me out in the beginner class, and you can train for free. So I did that, you know, essentially up to getting my black belt.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That's like every kid's dream, you know, right? To be asked to be a an assistant, helping out with the beginners or the kids class and stuff, and get training in return. That is so cool. And you've done. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just very lucky. I'm sorry. I was just very, very lucky.
Now you've done. Let's see if I remember now. This is off the top of my head. You've done jiu-jitsu also, correct? You've trained with a lot of great people.
Yeah, I was just very fortunate. I mean, you know, I remember first one of the things I did was I saved up my money for a year to go down to Atlanta, Georgia to train with Keith Vitale. He was the number one black belt in America.
Oh, very cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've known him for about 30 years. We're still great friends. You know, we still talk, and, you know, he still gives me advice, you know, mm-hmm. what to do and stuff like that. And I'm just grateful for that relationship and that friendship. You know, he's always been there. It was something I wanted to seek out. It was, you know, martial arts is very important to me. It taught me a lot. You know, the reason I got into it was, I mean, I grew up at the tail end of the Vietnam War. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, when we're fighting a country where, you know, if you look anything like the enemy you're fighting, you're kind of, you know, you get the short end of the stick, and, you know, and
mm-hmm.
that's what happened when I was in school. So I got picked on a lot. So I knew I had to do something. I got to do something to, you know, to take care of myself, and that's what I did. And, you know, what for me personally, what it did was it actually taught me how to, you know, it taught me to be proud of my background and my culture, and that it was nothing to be ashamed of. So
mm-hmm.
that was really important for me. You know, I was like, wow, yeah, you know. Yeah, and then, you know, watching the, you know, Bruce Lee movies at the theaters growing up, too, it made me realize, hey, you know, I'm not that bad of a person after all.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very cool. Well, why don't we do this? We have a very patient caller on hold, so let's go ahead and take the call. So area code 310, you're on Dynamic Dojo with John Krang. Who are we speaking with?
It's William Christopher Ford.
Hey, how you doing?
How are you?
Really good. Thanks for holding.
I'm a very patient man, and John Krang is worth the wait.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing, sir?
How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. How you been? Haven't seen you in, what, 2 days?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's been a long wait. I got to work with John on the project he was talking about with Rob Moses and with Free Carradine. So it was a lot of fun. And I had met John briefly at the Museum Honor Awards, but we really got a chance to hang out and talk and get to know each other. And found out we had a lot of people in common, and I was really impressed with John's encyclopedic knowledge of kung fu, movie history, martial arts movie history. So I do believe I've made a friend for life. He's a great guy.
Oh, definitely. Same here, man. I mean, we're also talking about, you know, the people that we didn't know this, but we kind of grew up with the same people, you know, that we were, you know, friends with and stuff like that, you know, just like Stuart Kwan and, oh, man. Yeah, and then, you know, just all these martial artists that we kind of, you know, met and fought and trained and, you know, along the way. It was great. Yeah.
It was a fun shoot, and, you know, I mean, I also took a look at your website and took a look at some of the clips from Battle B-Boy. Very, very interesting stuff. You know, just combining that whole dance thing with the martial arts. How was that? And you know, how did you put that together?
It was something that was created by the producer and director and the DP. They came up with the idea, and then it started off as three fights because they could only afford three fights. And then as they got to know me and we started talking more and more, we decided to add more. So it ended up being 24 fights total.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of work. But you know what was great about it was these dancers, they knew innately the performance aspect of what was involved. So I didn't have to teach them too much about how to, you know, work for camera. I just, you know, basically, it was just basic, simple little things that they weren't aware of. But they already knew this from their dance background about how to sell and how to make it look big. So, and if you look at some of the stuff that they've been doing, they've been cribbing off of Kung Fu movies. A lot of those moves have been coming off of Kung Fu movies, and they didn't know where it came from. So I explained to them where those moves came from. They go, oh, okay. And I, you know, they already kind of knew how to move, do the moves. I just had to tweak it here and there. And then what I would explain where those moves came from and how it was applied. And they went, oh, I get it. I get it. You know, and it's just, you know, it was a great collaboration. I mean, I couldn't have done it without their help because, you know, we didn't have the time to really get in detail, you know, and really construct it. So it was a collaboration. There was, you know, these are some of the best dancers, you know, we had, that they're great. I have nothing but great things to say about them because they came up to bat and, you know, it was minimal takes. You know, because they knew what they needed to do, and they've been practicing. This is, you know, their craft is, they're dedicated to their craft as much as us martial artists are. You know, and they take a lot of pride and honor with what they do. And a lot of people don't think what they do is an actual sport when it actually is, or it requires athleticism. You know, and it does. I mean, it's kind of funny when you think about it. You know, but yeah, it is. Their dedication is as similar as what we do in the martial arts and why we stay in it for so long. It's the same, same thing.
Is that project complete already that we can all watch the whole film?
I'm sorry?
We can watch the whole film. It's somewhere. It's available somewhere now, or has it been released?
Yeah. It's on Netflix. It's on Redbox. I know it's on Netflix, PS3. It's on all your VODs, video on demand, outlets and cable stations. So yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, we're about to go worldwide too. So yeah, just watch out.
Very cool. Very cool. Hey guys, thanks for letting me talk to John. I'm gonna go, and I'm looking forward to seeing you guys. Maybe hopefully at the Dragon Fest or at the museum or someplace.
Yeah.
Soon.
Definitely.
Don't be afraid. Thanks for calling. Whole 2 days.
I'll do it soon.
Awesome.
Take care.
All right. Thanks for calling, Sensei
William.
Thanks, William.
Thanks.
All right. And that was Sensei William Christopher Ford, owner of the Kaizen Dojo in, area code 310. What is that? Is that Torrance or Inglewood? Torrance.
Well, no, that's Torrance. Well, Inglewood as well, but the Kaizen Dojo is in Torrance.
Very cool. Very cool. So if you're in Torrance, check out Kaizen Dojo. Very awesome karate school over there.
Very
awesome.
Now, John, you grew up in the martial arts. How did you enter the bouncing side? Tell us a little bit about your bouncing experience.
It kind of just happened. I was I had to retire from competition because I tore my groin muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to find something to do with my life, so I decided I did a bunch of things. I went to college, tried to do a bunch of different things, and it just didn't fit. And then finally, I settled into stand-up comedy, and I did that for 14 years.
Awesome.
I was, actually, you believe it or not, the similarities are very same as far as when you're free sparring or you're fighting somebody. You're setting somebody up. You're making them believe you're doing one thing, and you just do this left turn, and that's when you hit them. And it's the same philosophy as delivering a joke.
That's a great analogy, because I was going to ask you about that, because most people would think that, well, comedy and martial arts, you know, two completely different sides of the coin, but I really loved how you put that. That's awesome.
No, yeah, it's the same thing. When you walk up on stage, you might be nervous as all hell, but you can't show them your legs are shaking. You gotta go up there and seize the mic. You gotta seize the space in the ring or wherever. Mm-hmm. You can't. It's a mental, psychological, and emotional battle. As well as physical. So you just got to go in there and kind of, my martial arts helped me become a better stand-up comedian. And, you know, be honest with you, when I did this, I did it for 14 years. I had 3 national TV appearances. I was LA Weekly's Comedy Pick a Week. I was a regular at the Comedy Store for over a decade, so I learned and performed with a lot of great comedians like, you know, Robin Williams, Jim Carrey, you know, Tommy Davidson, Martin Lawrence, Robin Williams, Sam Kinison, George Carlin. I mean, I learned a lot. You know, it's just like
going
to college, you know. And
wow.
At the time, it was considered the toughest club to play. And I never thought about it until afterwards. And, you know, my friends, we just kind of, when we get together, we talk about it. And it's kind of like war stories. Remember when we did this? Remember when we did, yeah. You go, yeah, we had that. But, you know, he goes, you know, have you thought about this? You survived for a decade at a club, the hardest clubs to play at and be a regular at. And I thought about it, I go, yeah, you know, because any given night you could follow, you know, some of the world's best comedians.
Yeah.
And you had to get your composure together. You had to believe in your material, just like you would any technique you would do in the martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
You had to prove it. You had to get up there and just kind of work it. And it's the same thing. That's what made me survive. It was my martial arts training that helped me survive, you know. And I remember, you know, one of the veterans at the store told me, he goes, hey, look, it takes 10 years, 9 to 10 years for you to get your first TV appearance. And I knew, I was like, no, it's going to take me much less because of what we learn in martial arts when we, you know, if you
mm-hmm.
you've mastered a certain system, you kind of look for, you know, you go into another system, you kind of look for the similarities and kind of work on that, and you kind of your progress is accelerated a little bit. It does,
yeah.
Well, you know, that all depends on the new style that you're jumping into. I mean, you know, so
mm-hmm.
but still, that's the principle that I took. I was like, all right, you know, I'm gonna find out what makes what works, what doesn't. I'm gonna study every comedian just like I would any fighter or any martial
mm-hmm.
artist I was gonna go up against. And I did that. I just said, all right, what's this guy doing? You know, what's he doing right? What's he doing wrong? Beyond my own prejudices of if this guy was funny or not, it's
mm-hmm.
the same thing. I would do the same thing like I would, you know, in a tournament. It's like, what's this guy
That's
doing?
Very
what
cool.
can I do?
Wow,
that is
so awesome, John. And if your family's like mine, my daughter tells me, Dad, you're not funny. Don't try to crack jokes around my friends. Until I got married, I thought I was funny. Rusty thinks I'm funny. My family,
it's because
no.
I'm not married to you.
That's right.
Yeah, and they're a tough audience. It's a real tough audience because, you know, it's funny because I, you know, it's a lot. I met a lot of people that said they could do stand. They go, I want to do stand-up. I have aspirations of doing stand-up. You know, I'm funny at work. I'm funny with my friends. I'm funny with my family. The thing is, you know, it's harder to be funny with your friends, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
As opposed to strangers, because they don't know where you're coming from when you get up on stage. It's just like fighting in the dojo. Everybody is, oh, I know you. You do this, this, and this. So they expect it. It's the same when you walk into a tournament. You go outside of your backyard. You go into a tournament. They don't know you. They don't know where you're coming from. They don't know how you're setting people up. That's the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. Same exact thing.
That is that is so cool.
Yeah. And back to your original question. Sorry for the stretch here.
Oh,
I'm
going to stretch back to the comedy a little bit later. But, yeah, back to bodyguarding, I guess.
Yeah, how I got into that was, you know, I was the only martial artist at the Comedy Store. And, you know, they things happen, you know. So so they saw that and they go, hey, man, you can take care of yourself. I go, yeah. And then... you know, Richard Pryor asked me if I could, you know, walk him, you know, to his car and make sure he doesn't get, you know, harassed by people and stuff. So when his bodyguard wasn't there, I would help him take care of, you know, just make sure he was never harassed by
mm-hmm.
by any of the patrons or anything like that. So I just would make sure he would make his way to his car and make it home safely. That's how I got into that, you know.
Wow.
Yeah,
because a lot of times people get actually set out to be a bodyguard. You know, a lot of people go, oh, I'm big, I'm going to be a bodyguard, and they set out to do it. And it's saying something when, you know, an established celebrity like Richard Pryor says, hey, John, well, can you walk me out to my car? Because they recognize, you know, your ability regardless,
yeah.
You know. That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So what other celebrities did you work with? At that time, or bouncing, or what clubs?
Sam,
I guess.
I did a bunch of after-hours clubs up here in L.A. that that were, you know, that kind of bounced around from place to place. I did a bunch of, you know, after-hours clubs, and the thing about that was that people are already either high or drunk mm-hmm. already coming in, whereas if you did it at a regular nightclub, you were, you were able to assess them before they walked in, and then mm-hmm. when they're at the club, they get sauced. But, you know, the thing about working in an after-hours club is you're already on your guard when you get or already lit when they walk
yeah.
in. Right. Yeah. So
yeah.
I mean you're ready to you know take care of business, I guess you can say.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
I would imagine
funny, John,
that Marshall. Oh, go ahead, Bob. Sorry.
It's funny, John. In some of the humble upbringings. Sorry, somebody just came through my gate, so I'm grabbing my blade. But anyway, some of the humble upbringings, I remember Robin Williams in the early 70s, mid-70s. He was a mime over at Busch Gardens in Van Nuys.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow, I can have it. Yeah. Yeah, I can. He went to Juilliard, and he was an incredible actor. You know, he still is. I mean, you know, he just had that unlimited energy that he just, you know, would just burst on stage or on camera. It was just amazing. It's just what he did back then with Morgan Minnie was so, you know, it was, where did that come from? But yeah,
yeah.
He trained to get to that point.
Wow!
Right! Wow!
Yeah. So did you get to talk to him or anything like that?
No, I've never talked to him.
He's a great guy, amazing guy.
You know, I did see a comic, the musical comic they called him. He was a guitar playing comic, and he worked on Mork and Mindy with Robin years before, and would tell stories about his cocaine addictions and.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that didn't matter to me. It was Robin Williams is one of the most brilliant comedians
mm-hmm.
that ever walked the face of the earth.
Yes,
he was on
Mork and
Mindy. It must have been Rick Wright.
Yes, that's
yeah.
who it was.
Yeah, I know Rick. Rick is a great guy. His flamingo guitar. Yeah.
Yes.
Flamingo. Flamingo guitar.
Yeah, it was great. He's living
awesome.
He's living in the UK now, and he's performing there. He's doing really well, from what I hear.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
Right on. Now, as far as bouncing, I would imagine that again, your martial art training, you know, really helped with that because, you know, I've met some guys, you know, big dudes, no martial art training in their life. They just assume that they're big and they're tough, right? Oh, I can bounce. But, you know, I would imagine that you would need more than just being big and tough. I mean, you need to know how to read people. You have to be
yes,
able to
yes.
assess the situation. So, you know, for I'm sure there are listeners out there that, you know, I'm not labeling people out there that want to be bouncers that, you know, that they think they're all big and tough. You know, I'm not labeling them that. But for anyone that wants to be a bouncer for a side job or for a weekend job or whatever, what advice would you give to them as far as, you know, what kind of, I don't know, personality to project or, you know, what advice would you give them to get them started?
I learned, first thing I'd teach them, tell them is to learn to have a cool head no matter what situation happens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if you think of the movie Roadhouse when Patrick Swayze is giving the speech to the bouncers, I mean, that's
uh-huh.
true. You got to learn how to assess the situation. You work as a team, you know, if you're if you have like a group of people that's assigned to different areas and different responsibilities of a club, you got to work as a team. You know to communicate, have certain signs that you guys can tell each other when there's trouble happening with the waitresses, the bartender, the, you know, the performers up on stage, you know, because usually the performers up on stage see stuff that happened before it ever happens because they're elevated, you know,
mm-hmm.
so they can tell you when something's about to happen, you know. Because, I mean,
mm-hmm.
if the place is crowded and you're at the same eye level, you might not be able to see as much. But, you know, it's about, you know, also remember, you are representing the club. You know, if you
right.
just walk up to somebody and say, you know, you know, you need to put a a coaster under that, and the guy tells you to screw off, and you punch him in the face. That's not cool, you know.
Right.
So I mean, you just gotta you have to know you're representing the company, and you can be, you know, they can be liable for your actions. So you can't just, you know, just because you're a badass at the dojo or in the tournaments or in the ring, doesn't mean you're gonna make a good, you know, bouncer. You gotta always learn how to have a cool head. You always have to divert. The last thing you do is take physical action. You have to use, you know, verbal Aikido or body language Aikido. You gotta learn how to read a person. You know, are they drunk?
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle them? You know, your first thing you do is you get them outside the club. So you diffuse the situation so they don't, you know, affect the other patrons. Because, I mean, if something happens to somebody that's minding their business, having fun with their family or their friends, and they get accidentally caught up in a skirmish, they're not going to want to come back again. So it's your job to make sure everybody is having a fun, safe time. So that's the most important thing. You know, when somebody gets out of hand, you just got to let them know that you're there. I mean, the thing about, you know, about being a bouncer, yeah, you're big. I mean, I'm not big, so a lot of times I got challenged. Like, I remember I was working this after-hours club, and this guy was, he was already lit, and he had two girls on his arms. He thought he was Mr. Hot Stuff, and the club was filled. And he, you know, and I said, you have to wait. And he started to threaten me, and he goes, "Do you want to know who I am?" And I said, "No, I don't. Do you want to find out who I am?" And and I just gave him a stare. I just gave him a stare, like, "Okay, you know, I'm not. This isn't just words." And he went, "Okay, all right, I'll wait." So it was just words. I didn't say anything. I came across like, hey, you know, you don't want to go past this next.
Yeah. Don't go there. Don't go there.
Yeah. And they went, oh, you know? Okay. Yeah. You know, so it's learning that fine line and it changes with every scenario.
Yeah. I bet you've got that a lot with, do you know who I am? You know,
yeah,
the preferential treatment people. And it just, I tell you the truth, I have no patience for those people. Even if I was, you know, big enough to be a bouncer, I would not have patience for people like that at all. I just go completely ape when people pull that. Do you know who I am? No.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are.
Yeah. Well, you know, you have to look at where they're coming from also. Because what they're doing is they're there to impress their friends. You know, they've got their chest all puffed up. So, I mean, you know, I try my best to kind of diffuse the situation in a subtle way so that they can keep their face and their honor with their friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I give them a couple chances. And if they, you know, once they, when they step over a few times, I'm like, all right, you know, look, you don't want to go there, you know, essentially. So you know, they could be on a business thing. They could be with their buddies. It's their birthday. I mean, it would kind of be a bad experience. Hey, man, remember your birthday? You got beat up by the bouncer.
Yeah. 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 And that's a great way to put it, John, is that, you know, you do everything in your power so that way they keep face with their friends. And, you know, I've never heard that from anyone that's, you know, that's, been a bouncer. I've known a few bouncers and I've never heard anything like that. And that was a wonderful way to put it. I absolutely love that. I'm going to have to share that. I'm going to quote you on that on Facebook, because this is one of the most like informational type of interviews we've had in the subjects of like comedy and bouncing and the ins and outs of it and stuff like that. That's awesome.
The other thing is depends on the club and the atmosphere. You have to be seen. You have to be known. It's just like this thing. You have to be seen, yet you have to be invisible.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to. You know, it doesn't. If you have a strong presence,
you could also elicit trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, you know what I mean? So you got to know when to turn that on and when to turn it off. And that comes on your martial arts training. You know, you got to know when to stand up and when to kind of, like, turn it down and not play it up as much, you
mm-hmm.
know? So yeah, it's your martial arts training definitely comes a lot, but when it comes to bouncing and doing security work and stuff like that, some people I know that do that, you have to know where that line is, and it changes every second. You know, the most important person is your client, the person that you're taking care of. You know, you have to make sure that they're going to be okay. But you also, I mean, there's depends. You know, you could be the soft hand and say, well, you know, Mr. Pryor's not feeling so well. He needs to go into his car. He'll come back tomorrow and he'll sign an autograph for you or whatever, you know. Or or you could say, hey, you know, that's enough. Mr. Pryor's, he's sick, you know. Or you know, he's got to go to another meeting. He's got to go to another club. Why don't you go to or whatever, you know. You're diverting that energy so that they, you know, your client is protected and that the person isn't slighted. But, you know, if they get too forceful, you got to know when to kind of, you know, become that wall. You know, mm-hmm. when the client becomes a wall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, it's learning about people. It's human psychology, you know, and unfortunately what happens when they get intoxicated.
Yeah. Well, the psychology goes down the tubes at that point with a lot of people.
Yeah. Your assessment skills have to really be on the ball, because if not, you're gonna get fired, or you're even worse, your client or the company will suffer because of your actions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always. You know, it's a tough job. And afterwards, you just gotta, you know, if you want to do this afterwards, you gotta do something for yourself to relax and unwind and take that spiritual shower to wash off all that gunk you got from that night. Because people,
mm-hmm.
you know, people have fun. They kind of like to, you know, bounce off of you in a way. And
mm-hmm.
as far as take things out on you or whatever, you know. So you have to do something afterwards for yourself, immediately afterwards. You can't just go home and sleep, because if you do, you wake up the next day, you're going to feel like crap. You're going to go, oh, God, I got to do this again. You got to do something right afterwards. Like, usually there's this Thai restaurant that's open to 4 a.m. that me and the rest of the brothers I know would go up there and kind of just relax and kind of laugh about the night.
mm-hmm. That's great advice, actually. That's wonderful advice. So you hear that, listeners? If you're looking to be a bouncer in your spare time, you know, do take John's advice to heart, because it's not just, you know, being the big guy standing at the door. There's a lot more involved. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I do have to ask. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, this is all stuff I learned from, you know, from being a dojo rat. You know, I mean, you
mm-hmm.
know. You know, when you teach, you know, you teach all day, you know, some people like to come in and kind of, they don't know how to deal with things, so you're their, you know, $120 a month psychiatrist, you know, so you kind of have to wash yourself off in a way, you know, kind of find yourself again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, your instructor, your students come up and go, I don't know what to do, and they keep doing the same thing, you kind of tell them, and after a while it kind of wears on you, so it's the same thing, you know, it's just
mm-hmm.
a different situation.
Very cool. That's wonderful advice, and I hope our listeners do take that to heart if they do think about getting into bouncing as a
yes.
side thing. That's awesome. Now, I do have
to
ask about comedy.
Yeah, don't take the job just because you want to look to get in a fight. That's,
exactly.
That's the wrong thing to do.
Exactly. And I, you know, and like I said, I've met a few guys over here in Seattle that are exactly like that. You know, they're full of piss and vinegar, and they're like, oh, I can bounce. You know what I mean? And they just stand looking like a goon at the door,
yeah.
you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, hey, come on over to the club, you know, I'll be there. No.
Yeah. Those are usually the guys that get fired after the first night.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
You know? or the first week or something. Yeah, it's
usually that's the type of guy that attracts the danger, and then the owner will tell you, "Hey, man, sorry, you got to go." Why? Oh, yeah, I'm a badass. Well, you know, that's not what a bouncer is.
Yeah.
That's not what security or whatever it is, you know. That's not what a bodyguard does. Because you're looking for it, and it makes the club, gives the club a bad name.
Yeah, it does. And I think it's those types of people that kind of give a bouncers that, you know, stereotypical image of the goon, the big goon, you know.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that, you know, that those kind of guys or gals. I've seen some gal bouncers too in some clubs here in downtown Seattle, and you would never know, you know. I was like, "Whoa, really?" Whoa.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But before we get back to Sifu Bob's questions, I do have a question getting back to the comedy. I thought about this when you were initially talking about comedy, and I'm very curious. Now, did any of your comedy routines involve talking about the martial arts?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
awesome.
I you know, I can't really say on this show because I mean it's kind of off color.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
we're off color, but we're but no, go ahead.
I did talk about it. I did talk about it briefly. It was part of my routine, but it wasn't a major part of it.
Okay.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I mean, I've been making threats to come back every once in a while, and I thought about some of the stuff I would talk about, and, I thought about it, but, you know, it's a lot of hard work, it's a lot of dedication, it's a lot of time putting into honing your craft. I mean, just the silence, the one word, one beat, one pause is the difference between a laugh and a dead spot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So... I thought about, you know, I still think about coming back every once in a while, but, you know, I got other things on my plate right now, you know, so I'm just, you know, on those other things. So, the climate for stand-up is kind of rough right now. There's not as many clubs as there used to be, you know, and, you know, I still want to do it, but, I have other aspirations right now that I need to take care of. So, I mean, you never know. I mean, who knows what'll happen. I mean, yeah, I might come back. I might not. I mean, and if I do, I'm thinking about, you know, definitely incorporating more of the martial arts and what I learned because I'm much older and wiser than I was back in the day. And, I see things a little bit, you know, from standing back more, and, you know, well, you know, if I do, I'll definitely let you guys know.
Yeah, you bet.
Definitely.
I'll travel to one of your shows. You bet. That'd be great.
Actually, I used to play up in Seattle at a club in the U District.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Giggles.
Yes.
Giggles. Yeah. Giggles. It's no longer there. So when you said, you know, the clubs are, it's no longer there. I think the Comedy Underground is still here in downtown Seattle. Yeah. So the Comedy Underground is still here, but Giggles was my favorite club that I used to go to in the 1990s. And then all of a sudden they were gone and I was heartbroken.
I used to sell that room out. I loved that room.
I'll bet. Yeah. It was a great venue. I absolutely loved it. And I'm still bummed out that there's no more Giggles. And, you know, now I'm curious. I'm going to have to look to see if there's anything that sort of replaced it. Because I can't imagine just a regular old bar going in that same place.
Yeah.
So Giggles was really cool.
Now, John, when did you, start your acting and being a stunt person? When did that career begin, and how did you get into it?
Okay, it was something I always wanted to do as a kid. You know, I saw the Green Hornet and I saw what Bruce did and I was like, man, that's awesome. I want to do that. You know, I watched reruns of Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, and I'd see, you know, whenever the submarine got hit, and I saw the crew members going back and forth. I'm like going, hey, I don't think that's really what they're doing. I think they're just moving the camera back and forth, and people are just going back and forth, you know, to the movement of the camera. And I kind of, it was something that I was always wanted to do as a kid. I thought it was fun. I thought it'd be fun to, you know, it was like playing war as a kid growing up, you know, it's like, and you get paid for it. So that's what I it was something that always appealed to me. So, what happened was when I was doing stand-up, I was approached by Golden Harvest Films. They saw me, one of the people who worked there saw me do stand-up, and they said, we'd be interested in you doing half your act in Chinese and half your act in English, and we were thinking about selling to a cable station. So I said, fine, let's do it. So we planned on doing it. I started honing up on my Chinese. Planning, the idea was I was going to go there for about a couple months and just kind of take in the landscape of the Hong Kong area and kind of work my act there. And and then they were going to film it. But what happened was this didn't work out. So they said, it's not working out, you know, but we still want to work with you in some capacity. I said, sure, well, what do you have? And they said they had a couple movies that they could plug me in. I said, one is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and the other one is a movie with Jet Li called The Master. And being the martial artist that I was, I said, you know, I'll do The Master. You teach me how you guys do your Hong Kong-style stunts. And they said,
sweet.
Of course. Yeah, so that's how I got into doing stunts. You know, I'm a big movie buff. I am, you know, like William said, I have this encyclopedia of film in my head. So if I see somebody, when I see somebody, their credits roll in my head. Oh, you did.
That's awesome.
So, and I already knew who Jet was, and Jet was in his prime. This was like his fourth or fifth movie. So that's how I got into it. And I said, look, I'll do it if I get a chance to fight him, and you can teach me how to do stunts. I said, yeah, sure, of course. So that's what I did. That's how I got into
it.
It was just
cool.
Yeah.
Of learn as you go type of thing. That's cool, because like a lot of the stunt people that I know actually went through actual schools. There's a school here in Washington State that a lot of people went through. I actually taught for only about 3 years stunt fighting for film for the International Stunt School here in Washington, and a lot of people out there now actually go through the school. And, you know, and it's very rare to meet people like you that actually are, you know, get into it and learn as you go with the celebrities. And that's cool, because a lot of the people, you know, that go through the school, you know, are still like, you know, wondering, where's my next gig going to be? Where's it going to, you know? And that's just, you're living the dream when you're, you know, learning as you go with Jet Li and, you know, working with all these actors and in Hong Kong and in China, you know, of all places. Yeah. That is so awesome. Very awesome.
Well, actually, this is what happened. They had a crew that, they brought a Hong Kong crew that came to America. So they came to us. The fight coordinator was Hong Kong. It was Yun Wu Ping's brother, you know, and they brought everybody. They brought all their best guys. They brought Yun Hua, who was in Kung Fu Hustle. He was the landlord.
Oh, uh-huh.
But a lot of people, laymen, they don't know that he was Bruce Lee's stunt double, who did all his gymnastics, like the kip-up, the round-off flip-flop, triple back. That was all this guy named Yun Hua. You know, he grew up in the Chinese opera school with Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung and Yun Biu and all those guys. So, and he was the same build as Bruce. So he, you know, I learned from him, and I learned from a few other guys that was like, they had a couple Jackie's stunt people that came on, and you know, we all had our own guy that we had to follow, and they would teach us all the stuff. And I kind of knew about this before, so I would come and watch, you know, several weeks before, and just watch what these guys were doing. So I had a couple steps ahead of everybody else, because this was what I wanted. I knew this was something exciting to me. I wanted to do this.
Very
cool. The thing was, I don't think the stunt school existed when I started in '87.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, because what happened was back in the day, I mean, even here in the West, you know, you didn't know anything about a stunt person. You had to ask somebody. It's kind of like a secret society. You had to ask. you had to ask somebody, and then they kind of checked you out, and then they, said, all right, well, you want to show up on set and haul a couple mats for me and, kind of see what this is. Yeah, and it's kind of done that way, and that's how I kind of came up too. So, and then then it just kind of, exploded, later on.
Yeah, and that's how I got the job with the stunt school. Is that another instructor and stunt person said, hey, you should bring in Rusty to help with the, wushu look, because that was when like the Matrix, was getting really popular, that type of feel. And no one could teach it at the time in that particular stunt school. And, so one of my friends that taught said, hey, you guys should get Rusty. So at the time it was like you had to know somebody, like you said, like secret society type of secret, secret squirrel kind of club type thing. And but now, with the schools and stuff, like almost anyone, can go in and learn how to do it. But, I guess the hard part would be is finding the work. At that point, and
I mean it's easy. It's a little easier now because you have the internet, and you have. I mean, I think it's a little easier now because of digital media. Everybody. I mean, anybody that's got a camera is telling you they're a director. Really, what do you expect? Well, I watch a lot of movies, and so I mean, it's the opportunities are much easier now, and you can you could put together a demo reel and post on YouTube, and you'll get a lot of hits if it's really good.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen a lot of reels on YouTube, and people going, hey, you should do this or that. And, one of my friends put up a demo reel of him doing stuff, and some show in Japan like called him up and said, come on down. And I was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah. I mean, the internet has made the world that much smaller now,
Yeah. I'll agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, it looks like we lost Sifu Bob somehow. His call dropped. So I'm going to go ahead and dial him in again. So we might hear the phone ring here. He just disappeared. I don't know what happened. Let's see if he'll...
He had more important people to talk to other than me.
At least he could have done was text me and say, hey, I'm leaving. It might have been his phone, too. I don't know, but if not, I'm sure he'll call back on his own.
818-457.
Okay, well, maybe he'll call us.
Okay.
All right. But now, speaking of acting, a lot of people, are very content with acting and not being behind the camera. Now, did getting into film producing, did it seem like the next logical step for you, or did that kind of happen on accident as well?
Well, what it was is I started field producing for the Weinstein Company for their DVDs. Yeah, for their DVDs, they release the Kung Fu movies from the Shaw Brothers, and what happened was I knew all those people. These people were my heroes growing up, so I got to talk to them and I got to know them. And when you work in the industry, you see these people and they start talking to you. So, I mean, that's what I started doing. I started field producing a lot of the behind the scenes documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
For the Weinstein Company and Hong Kong Legends in the UK. So mm-hmm. I already knew Keith Vitale, so they flew me out to Atlanta to do a documentary on him. So, of course. So, and then I did one with my sensei, Benny the Jet. And then, I did one with Peter Sugarfoot Cunningham, Cynthia Rothrock. Then I field produced and directed. I directed all those things, too. What did I do? I did the interview and field produced the interview with the director from Five Fingers of Death, and that's like one very important film. It was the first movie, the Kung Fu movie that came out here in America several months ago.
I remember that.
Yeah.
That was a great movie.
Yeah. So that's how I got to do that. The more you know, the more your responsibilities expand, and that's what happened. I mean, I'm very passionate about this, the movie business. So I just ask the right questions.
So
right
and,
on.
You know, just got, yeah. So that's, I mean, that's how it's an evolution. And the reason I became a second unit director and started becoming more in control of what I was doing is I have a certain way of shooting and choreographing action that Westerners aren't quite familiar with. And
mm-hmm.
oftentimes I have to kind of educate them on what needs to be shot because a lot of filmmakers that come out of film school think shooting a fight scene is just like shooting dialogue, where you have a master camera right and camera left.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is 70% of all the moves from each angle is going to be NG. It's going to be a miss.
Mm-hmm.
So why waste the time on doing it that way when you have to figure out the angles and shoot it in pieces? You're burning out your actors,
mm-hmm.
burning out your stunt people when you do it, when you go, it's like running, you know, 100-yard dashes each time, expecting each run to be as fast or and even as good as the first run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
awesome.
Yeah, that's yeah. So I, you know, I'm taking more control of what I'm doing. I'm going to be directing a pilot at the end of this year. We have some celebrities already attached, and
oh,
you
good.
Know, yeah, I have Melissa Tracy's going to be one of the leads in it, and it's going to be great. You know, I'm going to be doing a fan film also to get my name out there. Because there's a certain way I'd love to have fights filmed. And, you know, for the last 15 years, I've been, you know, a stunt coordinator and, you know, and a second year director. So there's a certain way I know I want to set this up. And, you know, I feel a lot of fight scenes, like, there's no emotion attached to it. It's all like this big wow. There's no nonverbal story that's being told. It's just like, isn't that cool? And it gets kind of tiresome after a while.
Mm-hmm. I'll bet.
You know, so I was brought up in a Hong Kong style of fight choreography, so I believe there should be a nonverbal story told with this. And, you know, I'm writing my second book on the art of fight choreography right now. First movie.
Oh,
first
good.
Book, yeah, it was out about 6 years ago, 5-6 years ago. It's doing well. I mean, I'm getting a lot of, it's called Fight Choreography, The Art of Nonverbal Dialogue. And it's over 600 pages. And this one I'm working on right now is called The Fight Choreographer's Handbook, a Guide for Filmmakers, so they can understand what the stunt department does. And
cool.
We can work as one cohesive unit. Yeah.
So your first book, is that available on Amazon for?
Yes, it is.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Very good. And I'll try to find that, and I'll post that on our Facebook page, too,
nice.
To let people know about your first book. And I'm definitely looking forward to hearing that your second book is coming out. So,
yeah.
And it looks like we have Bob back. Bob,
all right.
Happened,
we do. And, you know, my phone died and it wouldn't reboot. But remember, he's also going to have his first book, I'm sure, at Dragon Fest, and we'll have a table.
Yes. And definitely we'd love to see about having you join us again for a short, live.
Absolutely. And the thing is, John, all of our guests just give us stuff. They give us autographed books and things like that. So we'll be there.
Nice one, Bob.
Yeah, you know,
you like that?
Not good one.
Of course, I'll get you guys one. No worries. Yeah, I know. Also, we're going to be selling a DVD there. Melissa Tracy and I, we did a seminar about, you know, what it, fight and action for filmmakers.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be selling that DVD at Dragon Fest.
Oh, very cool. So both you and Melissa.
Very cool.
Yes, that'll be cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. You know, I just found out, this is kind of off subject, but this is about Giggles Comedy Club here in Seattle. I got to share this with you guys because it's pretty funny. It closed, I forgot, like in 2011. Or no, it's like 2000. Well, it closed in 2010 or something like that, right? But it turned into a gentleman's club called Jiggles.
Oh God!
Really?
And, yeah, but the business shut down in March 2011. The actual owner of Giggles, Mr. Bob Davis, made that decision to convert it into a strip club in 2010. And a lot of shit hit the fan about it being within 800 feet of a school, a child care center,
yeah,
a community center, and a public park. So it closed, and it's now renamed Giggles, but it's pretty much just a bar that's owned by another bar franchise here called the Lux, and they only have comedy at this new Giggles only on Sunday nights, which is kind of disappointing because, you know, I love going to Giggles like any night and seeing comedy.
Wow.
But now it's just, you know, it's Giggles, Jiggles, Giggles. Now it's back to Giggles. I just wanted to share that because I was really curious about it. But we've only got about 10 minutes to our live broadcast. So, Bob, I'm going to give the mic to you and see if you have any other questions before we close out.
Well, hopefully I won't repeat one since I was gone for like 10 minutes. But
no,
I think I got it. I hope I got it. Some of your most memorable experiences in films, either as a producer or an actor?
This just happened about a couple months ago. I was working on a TV pilot called Mr. Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I was hired to be the stunt coordinator on it. And the two producers were the people that did Battle B-Boy. So they trusted me, and the DP was the director on it, so he stepped up. So they tried to get the old team together and said, sure, of course I'll help you out. So what happened was I was here ready to Kurt at this fight scene. What happened was, here, I'll give you a scenario. This guy's being chased by this hitman. And he bumps into this guy and goes, please help me, please help me. And you find out that he's an agent for hitmen. You know, he kind of brokers a deal. And the guy who's being chased is being about to be killed by this hitman. And he finds out the money, you know, that he's not getting as much money as he should be and all this other stuff. So the actor that was hired to be the guy being chased was, didn't remember his lines. It just didn't work. So he got fired.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we're shooting.
Oh.
Hello? Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then what happened was, so they fired him and they said, hey, John, do you want this part? I was like, going, what? And they said, well, it's going to take, how many pages do I got to remember? I go, it's 3 pages of dialogue. So I said, all right, how long do I have? How long do you need? I go, how about give me 20 minutes? Because I knew, you know, as far as these productions are concerned, time is money.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
And they just hit a huge speed bump right there, and I was like thinking, you know, give me a couple days and I'll remember these lines. That it wouldn't have happened. I had to step up. So Melissa Tracy was with me, and I said, hey, please help me. You know, she's been an actress for over 20 years, and she's also a stunt professional, and you know, and so she said, yeah, of course. You know, so we went to my car and we ran the lines. We went back and forth. I mean, she's a great acting coach. So she bailed me out on several scenes when we worked on Battle B-Boy. So
mm-hmm.
So what happened was I had the lines remembered in 20 minutes, and it went well. It was hard because I was acting against Joseph Gatt, who was on Banshee and Game of Thrones, and George mm-hmm. Belfi from Entourage. So I mean, I wasn't going up against, you know, wannabe actors. These are established actors.
Wow.
So I had to jump in that pool, and it was a comedic thing. So that's where my stand-up comedy background came in to help.
Oh, cool.
You know, that was something I go, oh my God, thank God I survived that, and you know, made the scene work. You know, another one is Battle B-Boy. You know, it's one of those things you do for because you're passionate about it. And another thing is, you know, the crew, everybody loved each other. Everybody really cared about each other. And so every time you showed up, it was like, you know, you're at a Thanksgiving family dinner, you know. It's just like, hey, what's going on? Well, it's you, you know, that type of stuff. So it's the chemistry of the whole cast and crew, that everybody was there to help each other and support each other and lend a hand when you didn't, when you were shorthanded that, you know, that day. And that was, you know, it's a great feeling.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and the, you know, the guys, the dancers, they stepped up. It was a collaboration. They gave me their best. I said, what do you guys, what's your best moves? How do you interpret this character? And we would just kind of make it happen to, you know, I'd pick their best moves and make it into a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Wow, very nice. John, one more question, because we only have about 4 minutes, 15 seconds left. If people have questions, if they want advice, is there a way of getting a hold of you that's comfortable?
You can get me through Twitter. At Jay Kreng, J-K-R-E-N-G.
Mm-hmm. Jay Kreng on Twitter. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
You can get me through there. You know, there's, okay, on Facebook, there's a group called Fight Choreography, The Art of Nonverbal Dialogue. And it's filled with stunt professionals, filmmakers. You can get me through there. Those are the best places to get me.
Awesome. We'll get those that contact info on our page as well for any of the listeners that happen to have missed the live broadcast or will be listening to the archive version. Very cool. Well, I'm kind of bummed out that our two hour window is gone already. And, you know, we hope to have you back on another time so we can talk a little bit more. But definitely we'll see you at Dragon Fest in May. I'm looking forward to meeting you because I see a lot of your posts on Facebook every day, and I'm looking forward to finally meeting you in person. that'll be great.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us this afternoon for our lunch show. And Bob, thank you also for being a great co-host as normal. And thanks to all our listeners as well for joining us. And thank you again, John. And we'll see you in May, all right?
Thank you. Thank you. It's been an honor being on your show, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. All right. And Bob, why don't you tell our listeners who we're going to have on next week?
Next week, I'm very excited. We are going to have the legendary kickboxer, Peter Sugarfoot Cunningham, has agreed to be our guest next week for our evening show, which will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. No, I guess it's Standard Time.
Yeah, Pacific Standard Time. I can never tell. But, yeah, you know, John was talking about working with Pete when you were gone on your phone.
Okay.
Yeah, when you were gone on your phone debacle. But, yeah, so next week we'll have Pete joining us. So, John, if you're interested, you can join the conversation too.
Oh, sounds like fun.
Yeah, very cool. All right. Well, thank you again, John and Bob, and all our listeners, and we'll see everybody next week with Pete Sugarfoot Cunningham. Have a great day, everybody.
Right, take care.
Take care.